Oh, hey there. I'm Guy Branum, and welcome to Pop Rocket, a weekly show picking over all the pop culture we love to love. It's a streamlined episode, you guys. It is sleek. If you're too warm because it's summertime, don't worry. This is going to be a light and efficient Pop Rocket. With me to talk TV, film, music, and anything else entertaining, our journalist and novelist, Margaret Wappler.
Oh, hello there, Guy.
Oh, hello, Margaret. You really showed up in the kind of summary fashion that I expect from you, the kind that I envy most. This is a breezy caftan we're working with.
Indeed, and it is from Etsy, but courtesy of the country India.
And also, I just want to step back for a moment and say, usually caftans, like, their color palette is of the earth.
Yes.
And this is, or of the flowers, but this is like a Margaret Wappler, like, dystopian 1987
Thank
caftan.
You for recognizing me.
Caftan modernism.
Thank you for seeing me as I have always wished to be seen. Yeah, there's some stripes, there's some turquoise. I should be wearing some sort of, like, large beaded jewelry with it, but I don't know. I'm working
you guys,
on it.
I'm so ready for Margaret Wappler's wooden jewelry phase. Like, Silas gets
it
into high
coming.
School. And we got pop culture scholar and dyke about town, Karen Toxin.
Hey, Guy. Hi, Rocketeers.
Karen, I'm sorry to just be doing red carpet on this whole thing, but you've got a really fun plaid going on.
It's Madras plaid, also courtesy of the country India.
They brought us so many good things.
Yeah, we're heat wave's coming through Los Angeles this next week, and I think both Margaret and I are obviously preparing for it with our loose-fitting linens and other fabrics.
And a very cute short, let's be honest.
Like, oh, yeah, yeah. It's from the, it comes from Canada.
Oh,
they
really?
It comes from Canada. This shop called Frank and Oak. I'll tell you about it on the Facebook page if you want to know.
I remember you recommended that place to me. But, you know, when did we start, like, doing pant and short as singular?
Oh, that's interesting.
Like, people do that now.
Yes.
I'm sure it's like a fashion magazine thing that started, and it just spread out to all of us.
There are certain types of linguistic drift that really bother me. Mm. Anything historical that is using the... like, documentaries that use the present tense to feel more immediate, I get so mad at them.
It's the past, damn it,
but
obviously.
The shift to short, I'm fine with. You guys, I would like to formally apologize for this. We're moving into the month of my hard plugging of the book, all right? I've brought the book up before. But my book, My Life as a Goddess, comes out July 31st.
We're in the same month now.
It is a memoir, but I sort of talk a lot about popular culture and how that shaped the way I saw my own life. And so it was very much inspired by what I have learned and grown into over the past 4.5 years here on Pop Rocket. So please pre-order it today. I'm
done.
Sorry. All right. Coming up on this week's show, I mean, it's the middle of summer. It's 4th of July. And we wanted to just talk about true independence. That is unplugged media. What do we do when we are going to remove ourselves from screens and Wi-Fi networks? I'm talking too much about it now. Plus, we'll each be sharing our latest gems. But first, let's find out what arts and entertainment news or events have caught our attention this week. Karen Tongson, about what are you this week?
I warned you all that I was going to talk more about sports as we, you know, work our way into the warmer summer months. And a very big thing happened in Los Angeles this week. King James, LeBron James, hashtag LA Bron, has signed with the Los Angeles Lakers, a.k.a. The Lake Show, a.k.a. Showtime is back in Los Angeles now. The Lakers have failed for about half a decade now trying to get another big marquee anchor player. And there was a lot of buildup to trying to get LeBron James with his free agency coming up to sign with the Lakers. And he sure did. Within 24 hours of his free agency, he agreed to come to the Lakers. He signed a 4-year deal worth $154 million. And he can actually sign as early as July 6th. So he committed verbally, like, this is all announced. It's all sealed. And officially by July 6th, so a couple of days after you hear this, he will be a Laker. And there's so much myth surrounding the closing of this deal. Magic Johnson reportedly spent the night before he made the announcement, before LeBron's agency made the announcement, Magic spent the whole night in one of LeBron's many Los Angeles homes. Because yeah. LeBron already has two or three homes in Los Angeles.
Oh, well, what an easy move for him.
Yeah, so he likes hanging out here off season. So Magic, I guess, spent like a late night talking him through what it meant to be a Laker, the legacy of the team, what impact he could make on the team that hasn't won a championship since 2010, but has 16 championships overall. Anyway, a lot of stuff building up to this, and I'm so glad that everyone who paid with their own money to get billboards that say, LeBron, come to L.A., these fantasy billboards on the 60 freeway have all had their investments emotionally and financially pay off.
But, okay, so what happened was LeBron was from Akron, and he played for the Cavaliers, mm-hmm. and then he went to a team in Florida. And that devastated the economy of Ohio?
It devastated the hearts of the people of Cleveland. And he won a couple of championships in Miami before he came back and won in Cleveland. And, of course, you know, he's been in the NBA Finals the past 4 years, of course, losing to the Golden State Warriors repeatedly.
Here's my question. Why would LA have any problems recruiting a big name? Is this like academia? Don't you want to have the job in LA? What would
I think it is a matter of, like, you know, if a lot of great players are playing in one place, franchise, in one team, that they're going to like want to be recruited there. Obviously, a lot of younger players want to play with the Lakers.
Margaret is right. You should only want to play on a team because of the celebrity of the people who have courtside tickets.
So this means to me that you should only want to play on the Bulls circa 1995, because that's where my sports knowledge begins and ends.
Yes.
And, I mean, I do think that there's something about the Midwest in general that must be more exciting for athletes, or any city where like sports is the real lifeblood of the city, which I just don't think is the case with LA. Like, there's so much going on in LA that sports is like one of many, many things, where I just feel like being a person from Chicago, it was like everything.
So I mean, as a Dodgers fan, as a Lakers fan, my family were huge Lakers, are still huge Lakers fans. The very first sporting event I came to in America was a Lakers game in 1983 between the Lakers and the Rockets. The 80s Lakers were such celebrities themselves. You had Magic Johnson, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, James Worthy. And, you know, you had, like, they won championship after championship in the 80s. And so that certainly cemented, I mean, they won many championships even before that, but like that really cemented the Lakers in particular is a very showbiz team that everyone wanted to have a part of. Of course, Jack Nicholson's presence courtside. He was there through the lean years in the 70s. Dodgers fans are very true blue. They're very committed. As someone who lives very near the stadium, you know, it's fireworks year round, people. Mm-hmm. anytime anything happening, for better or worse, yeah.
I mean, Dodgers games are really fun, but also basketball games are fun. They're like going to like a show. Like I like them.
Because of the cheerleaders?
Well, just because like you're like right.
You're inside.
You're inside. You're relatively close to them. And
the lights.
I like the angle of the seats. I feel like there's something very like leisurely about the angle at which you are watching.
Sadly, I've never been to a professional basketball game.
Oh, wow. Well, now you've got to see LeBron.
I know.
Anybody
want to give me tickets? I want to go. I've been to soccer. I've been to baseball a bunch. I've been to football, but I've never been to basketball. I feel empty inside now.
You've been to paradise, but you've never been to you.
That's right.
Margaret, let's stop.
Who am I?
Let's stop encouraging people who like sports.
That's true. He won't get much out of this podcast, for one thing.
What are you all about?
I am all about, and this is partly because of the theme of this show, but also because it's been on my mind. I downloaded this app called Moment. And Moment does this thing that is both very revealing and very horrifying, which is to tell you how much time you spend on your phone.
Oh, whoa.
It's,
you can't just look at your settings for that?
Your settings? I mean, it gives you like a percentage. I mean, yeah, the settings do tell you the percentage breakdown, but it gives you just like a holistic, like you have spent 5 hours on the phone today, wow, or whatever it is. So you can set it to have limits. It can buzz at you and even shut off your internet access if you want to do that. I've never done that to myself because I'm not that strong. But I have it set basically at like, I think 3 hours and 30 minutes, it'll buzz at me when I've been on that long. And there are some days where I hit that at like 10 in the morning.
Oh, wow.
I'm like, whoa, what am I doing? And part of the reason I got this app is, I mean, and let me just say, I don't think there's anything wrong with spending a lot of time on your phone. It can be a very gratifying thing for people. It can, you know, we read news, we text, we keep in touch with our friends. There's all sorts of things we do with our phones now. But for me, it's become a little bit of a different issue because I'm around my 10-month-old all the time. And he is now at the point where grabbing the phone, I mean, that's like the number one goal of his day. Yeah. Getting breastfed and then grabbing the phone. In general, I just don't really want to be like the mom that's constantly on my phone, you know? There's just this article in The Atlantic about the sort of perils of distracted parenting. And it talked about all these studies that have been done. Like there's been more injuries with children and with cell phone usage. There's been children aren't learning languages, like they're not acquiring language as fast because parents are in their phones and not having dialogue with their children. And that's like obviously a major way that kids pick up language. So yeah, there's just there's a lot more to it now than just like, oh, I'm dicking around too much on Twitter. So it's really interesting. I, you know, like I said, I haven't set mine to like shut off on me yet. It's mainly like info gathering at this point. I just got it a couple of weeks ago, but let me tell you, when you hit a 6-hour day, you kind of feel like, what have I been doing with my life?
If I ever have a child, I plan on having it be raised by an iPad. I'm just going to put it in a plexiglass box and then iPad and then periodically dump some food.
Yeah, and then it'll be a brilliant computer programmer.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Speaking of screens, I saw a good movie on Amazon Prime, and I wanted to tell you guys about it. It's very hard sometimes to tell the difference between things that are very much for you and things that are revolting to you. And when I saw advertisements for The Little Hours, which was very proud of itself for being based on two selections from the Decameron, I was like, fuck you, Aubrey Plaza. I don't want to watch your twee hipster we're proud of ourselves for having cursing nuns movie. And then finally I watched it, and this movie is exactly for me. This movie is, it stars Aubrey Plaza, Alison Brie, and Kate Micucci as three nuns in northern Italy who are just trying to, like,
that's pretty
get through the day, like, not be bored and get some dick, like every...
like all the nuns do.
Like every nun does. And yeah, it really does at the beginning sort of lean into this, like... These nuns, oh, first of all, the credit sequence makes so clear that they are evoking like 70s Italian films. Mm-hmm. Like that, those credits that sort of like immediately made me go like, oh, I know exactly what kind of period comedy you're going for, but also it's going to be funnier than those things actually were. And it's super great. Molly Shannon plays the mother superior of their house. David Franco is the guy who gets run out of a lord's house because he's been fucking the wife and has to pretend to be a mute and uses his situation to try to get as much nun tail as he can. Is there witch
pulling the nun tail?
That's almost like a weird Three's Company setup or something.
No, it's wonderful. And the thing is that like it's so easy to forget is that all of those things were built on like classic tropes of storytelling. They are, so many of them, still legitimately funny and interesting. And it was just nice to like really fall in love with the fact that, you know, some of the forces that shape us are universal and have been around since the Decameron. It was really, really super funny. And yeah, you should watch it.
How much side eye does Aubrey Plaza give in the movie? Like percentage of screen time of Aubrey's?
Somebody once noted that basically Aubrey Plaza is somebody who is always removing energy from a scene through her comedy. She's not somebody who is contributing energy to a scene.
And I like her a lot, though.
Like her a lot, too. She's one of my favorites.
I think she's very talented. I think that having Alison Brie there, who is able to give you Alison Brie has...
some more well-rounded actress.
Yes. And Kate Micucci is somebody who is there to serve the comedy in a very big way. It's super funny. Check it out. All right. When we come back, we're going to be talking about Unplugged Media. But first, we have to take a break. Also, you are listening to Pop Rocket, which is a podcast. I don't know if you've had a stroke in the recent past, but if you don't know what's going on right now, you're listening to a podcast called Pop Rocket. And I would say who the president was, but I'm not going to.
The Greatest Generation is the most popular Star Trek podcast in the world.
A pretty dubious distinction, but it's true. We've blasted through all of Star Trek The Next Generation, and now we are blasting through Star Trek Deep Space Nine.
Come find out why millions of people have listened to our show and the Star Trek industrial complex ignores it.
Go to MaximumFun.org or wherever you get your podcasts and look for The Greatest Generation.
Welcome back to Pop Rocket. I'm your host, Guy Branum. With me in the studio are...
Margaret Wappler.
And Karen Tongson.
And the 4th of July is upon us, but this year we will celebrate by unplugging. That's right, no screens, no electronics, no binging. We are declaring independence from modernity. Just good old-timey fun, by ourselves or in person and with other people. Also, the news is awful, so we are sad. And each... So we're going to share two pieces of pop culture goodness that don't require cords or batteries or push notifications about the rule of law no longer existing. Margaret. Margaret.
Yes, 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 love.
I shouldn't have made those jokes. Let's remove. Margaret, when is it that you want to consume unplugged media?
Oh, when do I want to consume?
Yeah, when's the situation? Are you a beach person? Are you a on your own bed person? Like, where are the core moments when you're really going on this deep dive?
Well, I would say the beach, definitely. Vacation is obviously like an easy time where you can just like set that email message. You can cut off the social media if you want. You can just be your own person and let your thoughts drift and not worry. I think too at night, just in general, like when I feel like the hum and the buzz of the day is subsided and I can finally just go ahead and do what I want to do without feeling like I need to check email or anything like that. Really early in the morning too, like when I was writing my novel, that was like the prime time for me. It was like 5 or 6 in the morning just because nothing's happening yet.
3 a.m. to 6 a.m. is a vacation from society.
It's true.
Yeah.
And we
unless
need to, like...
you're on your phone.
Yeah.
Right. Unless you have insomnia and like looking on Twitter for why aren't people tweeting.
Karen, what about you?
Also vacation mode. You know, the thing is, I find that a lot of my just everyday life, because of what I do for a living, part of it is unplugged and part of it is not. So I spend long days in, you know, a classroom or in meetings or doing research or reading. So I do feel split between a kind of arcane and unplugged professional existence and much more plugged in and raucous personal life. Mm. Also, one of the things that I like to do to unwind is to cook. And so cookbooks became a thing that really helped me, you know, because I didn't just know how to cook mysteriously. It was like in grad school. It was after actually... seeing a PBS pledge drive and getting The Joy of Cooking, like, revised edition,
nice.
That I decided, oh, I'm going to learn how to use this thing and do stuff with it. And I was really taken by the rubs and marinades section.
Uh-huh.
Because, you know, once you learn rubs, marinades, sauces, you can basically cook anything.
It's true.
And, you know,
because then you understand how flavors go together.
Yeah, how flavors go together, what things work, like, you know, what's best for roasting or grilling. So I became really invested in making marinades through The Joy of Cooking. And that was the real gateway to me, you know, being involved with food in such a profound way now. So I guess the unplugged media would be that old home, but also the acts that ensue from consuming it. You know,
I mean, the joy.
Say more, Karen.
Well, the rubbing and the marinating.
But The Joy of Cooking is such a wonderful text that is really prescribing in America. Like it, I think they're from Kansas City or St. Louis, but the Rombauer Beckers, who initially wrote it, like are trying to give you all the recipes you need to go be a wife in America. And it's been interesting seeing how that has evolved over time. Like, I remember when the big revision happened in the 90s, I was a little bit like...
That's the one I got, the one in the 90s.
I have that one too.
I was a little mad at it because it was like, I don't want to have Joy of Cooking Pad Thai. Like, fuck you, Joy of Cooking Pad Thai. But I had grown up relying on...
You wanted more aspic in your food?
Right. Yeah. Another Jell-O salad?
No, that's the thing is that like all of this German bullshit, I was completely like saying that's the real deal.
But I kind of love those sort of like gentle penetrations from the other cultures in America that suddenly Joy of Cooking was willing to allow. Like, yes, we will have pad thai and we will have like exactly one sushi recipe, you know, like that kind of thing. I referenced a chutney recipe several like Thanksgiving episodes ago, and then we had it in the cookbook, the Max von cookbook, and I got that from Joy of Cooking because that was sort of their admittance of like, okay, we'll give you a chutney recipe,
right.
And it's delicious. I do think that the ways in which they break down like the most simple of things. I mean, I forget every time exactly how much time to hard boil eggs.
Yes.
Like, I open up that damn book every time I hard boil eggs because I can't remember.
Margaret, I have to tell you.
A foolproof method.
I had a period of time with a gentleman who was able to so perfectly boil an egg to just like solid but still gem colored on the inside.
Mm-hmm. Impressive.
That it was a reason to keep him around
for
a while.
I was going to say, why are you married to this man?
Hashtag it me. I can do that.
Margaret Wappler.
Yes, dear.
Aren't you glad we left that nickname from last week behind?
If we ever do our 50s episode, we'll bring it back.
Margaret, talk to us about some unplugged media.
Well, I noticed that one of the questions that we were talking about was like, what did you do back in the day? And it was fun to answer that question because it made me remember how I used to spend the hours of like 3 to 11 p.m. or whatever it was, like after school. Some of the stuff I still want to get back and play, like drawing. I had that like drawing from the right side of the brain. Do you remember? You guys remember that book? It was like a big book, and like I don't actually even know when it came out. I think it might have come out like originally in like the 60s or something, but it was still around through the 80s and 90s. And you would just like get a bottle and like draw the bottle, but you can't look at your hand.
Oh, yeah.
You have to look at the bottle.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah, so that you're able to like capture exactly what your eye sees, as opposed to looking at the drawing and being like, oh no, there should be more light there. It's a beautiful
thing. My middle school teacher used that method. And I remember that he made us draw our favorite meal and just close our eyes and just draw it, like without having it in front of us. And, yeah.
Favorite meal with your eyes closed. I love that.
I drew steak and lobster. Anyway. I was 12.
Yeah. I mean, that's you had a heavy diet at 12 years old.
Oh, I'm rounding the corner to gout.
I'm just impressed that your parents gave you lobster at 12. My parents just didn't trust me with that kind of thing.
But yeah, I was always terrible at drawing. Obviously, my portrait of the steak and lobster didn't come out well. I don't know if listening to records counts as like some sort of media. I think it was a different kind of listening then, right, than we have now, or like watching music videos or whatever. I think that, you know, whenever I wanted some alone time in my room, I'd just like listen to music and close my eyes with my head between the speakers.
Yeah.
I think now when I listen to music, I'm usually doing something. I'm like cleaning or even like doing emails or whatever. And back then, I feel like you just put on music and then you just sit and chill.
Well, also,
didn't do anything else.
Because it was either a tape you owned or the radio. People were so frequently listening to the radio, and you kind of had to be paying attention if something good came on to like figure out what that was.
And so you could tape it.
Yeah.
Yeah. But continuing on, like, I think in a way, like, the things that we did in eighth grade or whatever to amuse ourselves, like, stay alive in our brains.
Oh, that's really interesting.
And now I am such, like, a visual perception game person. Like, David and I have this card game called Set, okay? And it looks like that kind of game that, like, when there was a show in the 80s and the police detective would be like, is this person psychic? It would be like, what's on this card?
Yeah.
Right? And they turn it around and it'd be like just some wavy lines. Like that's what the whole card game looks like. It's like wavy lines, triangles, like some other shapes, and you basically just have to match different sets. And you will sit there as two people just staring at this board of cards and trying to madly to find a set before the other person. I also like games where you can yell out that you won. That's a very victorious thing to me. And so we'll just sit there embroiled. And Dave and I are very weirdly competitive about it because I think he's a visual artist. I pride myself on being one of these people that every time I take a color test online, I can match that shit. Okay, yeah. I can match any of that
you
shit.
You are Pantone.
I am Pantone. Exactly.
The New York Times has, in addition to crossword puzzles, which I'm going to talk about in a couple of minutes, but they've started doing sets. So is that the thing where like they either have to all three be the same or all three be different?
Yeah.
It's super fun. It is like super fun,
it's
but also.
It's addictive because it's so simple.
But yes, but there's also so many situations where your brain is just blocking you from seeing the third one or whatever.
Yeah. And then when you finally do see it, it's just, oh, that kind of moment.
I was never a crossword person. I was very much deeply a trivia person. And my friend Chris Schleicher, who has been on the show a lot, was always like, don't you enjoy crosswords?
Yeah, I feel like they're so closely related, the like trivia brain and the crossword brain.
They are, but like there is a way that it's also demanding that you be acculturated to crosswords.
Yeah, you must understand the form.
Yes, and there are so many like internal rules that it was just a situation that like I was on vacation and there was like nothing to do. It was a hotel without televisions. What a terrible choice. And the dude I was with like was like, let's do the crossword. And he like understood the system. And like it got me into them.
It is a system. You have to think like they think. You have to think like Will Shorts.
But there is something like beautiful and creative about it, and the way that sort of like the things that you are able to put together, your clues are always dynamic. Mm-hmm. Like the whole time, there are ways, and I, you know, as a person who comes from like competitive trivia and stuff, the fact that like the input that you're given isn't static, it's sort of like evolving, and then you know you can sort of like limit it down to, well, it's this or this, but you know this is defining it. That was not in any way a clear description.
One of the running arguments that Sarah and I have is that she likes to do the crossword and she knows that I'm really good at trivia and you know, particularly certain topics, and she always asks me the question and I produce an answer, but she said no, that's too many. She'll always say that's too many letters. And then at some point, I'm just like, you have to stop asking me. She's like, well, you'll know who was on this show or in this movie, but you have to reduce that to three letters.
And so you guys go the whole week through. Like, I mean, I can do a Monday or Tuesday, but can you do like a Sunday?
No. Like, I'm not.
I don't do
classes. I need like a team.
I'm like not great at it. And there have been a couple of them where when I saw what the little trick was, I was like, fuck you.
Yeah.
You're removing D's from all of these words. But Margaret, just to go back to your what you did, it like between three
before
and six,
the internet took over
after
our,
high school,
colonized our minds.
Yes, is a wonderful question because when I was thinking about this, I didn't even think about it in terms of when I did not have a sport, I would so frequently end up reading through role playing games rules books or like putting together campaigns that I had no friends to play with.
Oh,
and I have
why?
To say, it's fine. I'm doing all right. But like when I came here and ended up finding dork friends, like I had this really, really great role playing game group for a while. And it really is one of the kinds of unplugged media that is the most complete experience that I have had. You know, it's like in like Regency novels, they're always in the drawing room, like sketching each other or playing some sort of stupid game. And I feel like I wish they'd had the sophistication to understand how a role-playing game works.
Well, in all those like German board games that are super immersive.
Yes.
I mean, I've played a handful of those, and I get why people go deep.
Yeah, they're really wonderful. Settlers of Catan is like a super solid game that also, one of the things I was reading the Wikipedia entry for German board games for like that sort of style, but one of the things that they noted is that like when younger children can create objectives of their own, that don't require winning. You know, if you're out of the game of winning, there are still things that you can do.
Or even just world building.
Yeah, world building.
Yeah, like there's this one called Carcassonne where you're just you're just building a castle. And the terrible thing about it is scoring it. Scoring it is super hard. Karen, give us another type of unplugged media.
Oh, gee. I mean, well, I guess somewhat adjacent to these world-building games is, you know, a lot of the things that I do when I'm just hanging out with my friends is, like, someone has to bust out the tarot deck.
Okay.
tarot cards. Part of many, many,
yeah,
many of
Crowley,
things.
Like, let me do a reading. I have so many friends practicing their skills of the tarot. And, you know, I'm going to do a Crowley deck. I'm going to do this certain type of cross reading or whatever. I don't understand it very much, and I rely on the people who are kind of immersing themselves in learning about, like, different histories of reading tarot and also different styles. But it's always a kind of pleasure to participate in that because you are, in essence, with each card or each set of cards, building, you know, certain stories that are about you, mm-hmm, or about the person who you're reading.
Yeah.
And so I think that it's not just a kind of, I mean, maybe it's an LA woo thing, but I think that, you know.
But I think the woo thing is spread pretty far and wide at this point.
Yeah.
I mean, one of my dear friends is, like, deeply into tarot, the Oracle of Los Angeles. You can go and get a tarot reading from her, and she's brilliant. And it's almost like a different kind of therapy session, I think, when you're in the hands of somebody who does it really well.
Definitely.
Well, also, there's something interesting about the fact that it's something that you're doing but is entirely about the person across from you, mm-hmm, that is, like, generous of focus. Both of the times that a friend has done a tarot card reading for me, afterwards I felt a little bit as though I had had a massage.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And I don't entirely understand why. I just know that it's nice.
You work some stuff out. Yeah. And I do think, like, good tarot card readers always know how to make a positive spin on anything that gets pulled up.
They're like,
you know?
Oh, it's the death card. But that could mean the death of,
right,
like, a feeling
rebirth.
Or a rebirth. Yeah. Or,
right.
Like, yeah.
There's, like, always the other angle of
it. The position that it's in. Mm-hmm. I mean, I also think that it requires a tremendous generosity of spirit for everyone who's sitting around while maybe you're getting your cards read or while you're listening to having someone else's cards read, because it allows you to reconnect to, like, whatever maybe even just the slightest hint of the inner life is of, you know, your friend in a way that's, like, whatever's concerning them, whatever they want to know about. And, like, I think that, you know, that allows you to kind of get into these deeper conversations that stray from just the reading. And so, I mean, I think that it's a really lovely thing to do with friends. It can get a little weird. It can get a little creepy sometimes. I've certainly been weirded out afterwards.
How so? What do you mean?
I just think that I have this relationship to predictions or futurity like, really wigs me out. I think it comes from Catholicism in a way. And so sometimes I'm just like, I don't want to know.
Yeah.
Like, I don't want to know if I'm going to have, like, an ish with somebody or if I'm going to have conflict at work or whatever.
Yeah,
I just
it can, like, set you up to kind of expect that.
Yeah, don't want, like, I don't want the predictive behavior to, like, be a self-fulfilling prophecy.
Yeah.
So anyway, and related to that, of course, is that we can spend hours at a time sitting outside on a summer night talking about astrology and rising signs and compatibility. And it's like many of us have committed these things to memories, but also many of us still have a lot of these books, like the birth sign books or like love signs or, mm-hmm, you know, it seems like among the secondhand books that people own, a lot of them, at least in Los Angeles, tend to be astrology books.
I mean, well, I may or may not have checked every single person I've ever dated more than three times their sign to see if they were compatible with mine.
What are you guys?
I've done that. I'm a Sagittarius. I'm going to give the whole thing.
Okay.
Sagittarius, sun, rising, and then a Pisces moon.
I'm a Virgo sun. And I'm an Aquarius rising, weirdly, but I don't know what my moon is. Yeah.
I'm a Scorpio sun. I don't know anything other than that. Margaret, what other sorts of unplugged media appeal to you?
Books, of course. I mean, I think that the nice thing about getting into a book on any given night is that it is just, I mean, if you are in the hands of a great book, it is just as immersive and just as tantalizing as anything you can find online. And it has the additional property of making you feel like you're engaging with your own mind's eye. Do you know what I mean? Where you're just lost in it and you can picture it. Recently, I started reading the Adrian Rich book from the 70s called Of Woman Born. And this is a kind of legendary book in certain like hippie motherhood circles, because she basically talks about how all of us are born of woman, and that we have a kind of relationship with women as being like our first template for every kind of human behavior we ever saw or knew. And the thing that's so nice about reading this book is that it just, because of when she wrote it, there's just no, you forget that there was, that the internet didn't exist yet as we knew it. And so you're going into this book where it is all just real time and behaviors. And I don't know, I just appreciate reading something where the internet doesn't even exist yet.
Yeah.
Never mind the thoughts of it, which are, you know, very interesting, but I can't talk too much about it because I just started it. But it just feels so good to be already in a different mindset that doesn't have the speed and rapidity of the internet. Like, you can just tell by the way her thoughts are flowing that she's sitting there and, like, really letting it just slowly meander out, and it's beautiful.
I mean, Adrienne Rich is such a beautiful writer, and I was a huge fan of all of her writings, obviously, especially because she is also a gender theorist and you know, a scholar as well as a poet, probably one of the most, you know, like one of the lesbian luminaries of the 20th century. And I remember that I used to be able to, like, back at, before the internet, I would just sit and read books of Adrienne Rich poems, you know. And at one point in college, she gave a reading, and I like had her autograph my books.
You did.
Yeah, it was really sweet.
It's nice to go re-explore analysis of human behavior from before now. Mm-hmm. Like, for me, just based on the books we had in my house, there's something about books like that from the 70s. That really sort of like formed who I am and are now just full of anachronisms and bullshit. But also, like, our stuff now is full of will be full of anachronisms and bullshit. And there's something nice to going back to a world where we, like, just deeply cared about Freudianism.
And, like, I know. Yeah. Well, and there's something too about, like, I don't know, I trust books from that period of time as being developed in a very pure kind of petri dish, in the sense that she was, you know, with her friends and with her community and getting ideas and all that kind of thing, but, like, not the kind of just onslaught that can happen from the internet or Twitter or whatever you want to say. Like, it's just a little bit more of a very organic kind of pool.
Well, there's something so interesting about that period of time when you had to go seek out anything that wasn't the radio or three networks of television.
Yeah.
Like, if it wasn't on 2020 or the Today Show, you didn't learn about it.
Yeah, and I'm not, by all means, I love the fact that you can just stumble on so many things by the internet, and I think that's just as valid of a form of being informed as anything else. But I just, there's something about the kind of, like, physicalness of it, even, you know, that she went to the library.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
And at the library, maybe somebody walked up to her and noticed what book she was studying and said, why don't you look at this one? You know what I mean? Like, that kind
of... Yeah, going to libraries was a really big thing that I did as a teenager, as an adolescent and a teenager. And so, yeah, whenever I get interested in anything, I just, like, stay in the stacks in that section and read my way through it.
Yes.
And that's the thing that you can't really get lost doing, I suppose, you know, on Amazon. It's like, if you like, you know, Adrienne Rich of Woman Born, you know, like, you might like this. But
it leads to the more trite journey of a Wikipedia hole.
Yeah, yeah,
you know?
Exactly. And there was something about, like, you know, meandering, or, like, in the sections adjacent to each other, right? And the Dewey Decimal System sure had it, you know, figured out, and they got us through so many different topics in this really kind of organic way that was really sweet, too, which was also about being in a space of silence and reading.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
And that smell.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so here's the question I present to you guys. It is a warm, wine-drenched summer evening. You are with a group of friends. Maybe you're at Cherry Grove. Maybe Martha's Vineyard. I've made it too much nighttime. Never mind. My question is essentially just this. I'm going to provide you with three options. You have to say which is a more appealing evening to you. They are as follows. Being at home playing celebrity or other just sort of verbal game-based games. Two, escape room. Going to an escape room. Three is a Dave and Buster's.
This room is going to say Dave and Buster's.
I might say Dave and Buster's.
It depends on the night, but like, you know, I think in my 30s I was like really into doing shit like that.
What, Dave and Buster's?
Like I'd be like, let's go to
Dave
and Buster's.
Kind of out of irony a little bit.
A little bit, but also kind of like, you know, we'll play some games and stuff.
I mean, the thing is that like all arcade games are now anachronisms.
Yeah.
Like there's no new production going on. It's stupid. But the things that are being produced, the best game at Dave & Buster's currently is the Deal or No Deal game, because it is both fun. It's just a guessing game. But also, I always make my friends, like, Deal or No Deal style, tell me about their family members with cancer or ask about what dreams they're going to actualize.
Aren't you a good time?
With the 400 tickets they get.
See, I think I just have a bad association with Dave and Buster's because it was always just like a line of bros out the door in Chicago. And so I always was just like, I'm not going to that place. But I probably should open my heart.
Margaret,
to it, huh?
It's Chicago. The feminist bookstore has a line of bros outside of it.
Well, they have. that is so true. They have a place that's, I suppose, like hipster version of Dave and Buster's called Button Mash in Echo Park, where it's like
these
vintage arcade games. Like, actually, sometimes Sarah and I have date nights there where we'll play Burger Time, which is a game from 1981,
yes,
or pinball, and like you can get food there. And
the thing is that like interesting beers and decent Korean food make me like that place less, you know?
Because you'd rather like just too hip, like they know what they're doing a little bit.
Yes, yeah. Where at Dave and Buster's, I feel like I am going and visiting
a
separate space.
Yes. I like a good Santa Monica Pier experience.
Yeah.
Yes.
Like that's, if I'm going to do some arcade games, like skee ball, I will wreck some skee ball for some time, but I like to do it at the pier.
All right, so between sort of like evening of like word games with friends or escape room, which one are you into?
Okay, you know, some friends of mine did try to get an escape room night like going. it was probably like a year and a half ago or something like that. And I couldn't read my own mind about it. At first I was like, oh yeah, that sounds really cool. And then I was like, wait, no, it doesn't. Like, I don't want to get all stressed out with this imaginary situation. Like, my life is hard enough that, like, I don't need to, like, pretend I'm trapped in a fucking basement. Why would I do this?
Competing with other people, right? Like, so you're in teams.
Yeah, I don't like that either. I'm also just, like, I'm not, like, that type of competition I'm not that into.
I just worry that I will hit some sort of, like, just point I can't pass and we can't figure it out.
And then, like, you're trapped forever.
Well, just sort of like, and then
you have
I won't
hit the button that's like, we give up.
Then I won't be good at it. And like, I have to be good at it.
Right. But like, yeah, exactly. Who wants that stress about
an
escape room?
A problem solving situation.
There are few things I enjoy more than pub trivia. Pub trivia is one of the few things in my life that I have identified as, Guy Branum, it is dangerous for you to get to go to a place and be right mostly for an evening that also involves fried food and beer. Like, if this happens, like, it's just...
You'll never leave.
It's satisfying me on so many levels that, like, I just have to pull myself away from it.
Some of our friends got very mad because we were having a little party with all of our friends in New York gathering, like in Brooklyn somewhere. And it was just like, gather with us, let's have some drinks. Then we found out that they were having like a trivia night in the back. So me and then a couple of my friends like went to the back. We tried to get other people involved to join our team, like from our group. But then I guess I got so intense and the other friends of mine who really knew it got so intense. Like, we actually yelled at the other ones for, like, having conversation. Helping figure out, like, these different categories of sauce or whatever it was. We really got, like, burned on Nickelodeon shows because we were all too old.
Yeah.
But we finished second and we got a bottle of wine. So.
Second is respectable.
Yeah.
Karen, do you want to speak in defense of intramural or low-stakes sports? since you've decided to make this such a sportsy show.
Well, I was just saying, you know, like one of the things that people, like adults, are doing now is not just, you know, signing up for intramural sports or like, hey, let's do like lesbian soccer on Saturday. But people are also taking like adult summer camps and other like.
Really?
Have you heard about this?
I know.
Like these craft things? This is a new thing. I've been like getting constant advertising for like an adult summer camp where you can go and do like various classes. Some of them have to do with like, you know, herb gardening, and it's kind of like continuing ed or things that you used to be able to do with through public works, but now you have to be like kind of bougie to pay for.
Akbar.
God, this world is so strange.
Yeah. Akbar had a crafts night.
Yeah, I know the person who does the craft night there, JP. They've been doing craft night there for a long time, and usually I've only gone to a couple of the seasonal ones, but where you can make like vagina Christmas ornaments and things like that.
Some friends of mine did that for a little while, and they called it Spirit Jam, where we would just get together and like knit and dye t-shirts and stuff like that. Yeah.
But there was a golden age of like gay kickball, kickball and gay volleyball teams,
yes.
In West Hollywood, where it really was just like. Everybody was like, oh, I'm not cute enough to get on. Like, they were always behaving as though if they could get on one of those kickball teams, then that would just be, like, tail for days. That's where all the hottest boys were.
That was, like, in the 90s in the Bay Area. Everybody was pretending to play rugby. Then everybody got, like, really injured, and then everybody was, like, sleeping with everybody else. So then, like, that rugby... I mean, I'm sure it still exists as a league, but it was a particularly traumatic era, I think, for many people.
So it was basically like an early dating app.
Early dating app.
It was
app,
a dating app with more knee injuries.
Before there was Tinder, you had to actually go play
rugby.
Also, come to our Facebook group and tell us what you like to do when you are unplugged. We want to know about your best strategies for entertaining yourself. So we'll be ready when the grid goes down. You're listening to Pop Rocket. We're going to be right back after this.
Hello, Amita Patel.
Hello, Sean David Johnson. What's going on?
I think a friend of mine may have chronic pop culture deficiency syndrome.
Oh no, PCDS? What are the symptoms?
Well, she doesn't know Wakanda from Westeros.
Shameful.
And she keeps confusing Aziz Ansari and Riz Ahmed.
Oh my gosh, so sad. Kinda racist too, but what did you tell her to do?
I told her to listen to our podcast, Inside Pop, of course.
Fantastic idea. A weekly dose of Inside Pop will help anyone discover the best in TV, film, and music.
Suffer from PCDS no more.
Inside Pop has you covered every Wednesday on Max Fun.
Welcome back to Pop Rocket. I'm your host, Guy Branum. With me in the studio are
Margaret Wappler
and Karen Tongson.
And every week on Pop Rocket, we ask our panel, what's your current jam? But first, I'm going to ask Margaret Wappler. Margaret Wappler, what's your current club?
My current club is the Summer Book Club. It's Crazy Rich Asians that we're reading this year from Kevin Kwan. We're going to talk about it in mid-August. I think some of us have delved in, some of us have not yet.
I bought it at least.
Well, that's a great start. So, I mean, you have time. And there's 200 or 300 or 400 or 500 or 600 books in the series, so you can go ahead and read the whole thing. But we're going to basically read the book and then also see the movie so that we can do some comparing. So go ahead and buy it. By the way, there are already people on the Facebook group who are talking, sharing notes, character studies, whatnot, what have you. I guess there's a lot of footnotes in the book, some discussion about that. So if you're in it already, go ahead and join the group and weigh in with your thoughts.
That sounds delightful.
It will be delightful. I think we're going to have to get some like good Chinese food for...
For sure. Yeah. Singaporean food.
Yeah, there you go.
Margaret, you got a jam?
I do. So, I mean, I think it's funny that we talked so much about unplugging and none of us ever brought up the radio, which is, you know, the ultimate device in some ways for unplugging because it's just so simple to, like, sit there and listen to the radio. And a lot of times David and I will listen to WFMU, which admittedly we do have to access through the internet, but we just access it.
J'accuse.
I know.
I know.
But then we just leave it alone and we don't touch the internet. And one of the songs that my husband caught in particular on WFMU, which is a real beautiful jewel of unplugging, shall we say, is a song called My Bathroom is a Private Kind of Place. It's from 1969. It's from The Bathrooms Are Coming, an industrial show musical produced for the American Standard Company to extol
my God.
The glories of their wonderful plumbing fixtures.
That's so beautiful.
So this is a song all about our special unplugged time in the bathroom, particularly for lay days.
My bathroom is a private kind of place, very special kind of place, the only place where I can stay, making faces at my face.
My bathroom. Making faces at my face.
Okay, I have to say one of my favorite lyrics in here. It's my bathroom. My bathroom is much more than it may seem, where I wash and where I cream.
Where I cream.
A special place where I can stay and cream and dream. I'm free. I'm free.
There was no better lyricist they could find.
Hashtag cream and dream.
I'm sorry. What the fuck?
I know. It's
that is my summer jam.
So if you feel like unplugging and going into your bathroom and creaming and dreaming, this is your jam.
It's on YouTube?
No, it's on FMU's website. Okay. I'll post the link on the Facebook page.
That's amazing.
Everyone will want to be hearing the whole thing.
It's worth your time and then some.
Tongson.
I went very pedestrian with the whole unplugged theme and actually just chose something from MTV's Acoustic Ooh. Unplugged series of mini concerts from the 90s. And one of my favorites ever was the 10,000 Maniac session from 1993 because I was totally in love with Natalie Merchant. Anyway, they opened with this number, a song that's very special to me because it conjures up like all of my hope and optimism as a young college girl twirling around in my flowered skirt and long white t-shirt with my long hair and Doc Martens. And it is none other than These Are Days.
Oh my God, where's the sunflower filter for the entire studio?
A whole room
here.
Full of sunflowers.
You guys, things got
and
very
sun-dried tomatoes.
Very Gen X in here. It was nearly Benny and June levels of Gen X in here.
I mean, don't you miss what that felt like?
Yes, totally.
And it's real heartbreaking because, I mean, actually, you know, Al Gore tried to use this as one of his campaign songs in 2000. That was, I think, the last time. I think Hillary tried to resurrect it again recently too at certain local stops, probably only in upstate New York near Buffalo, where the 10,000 Maniacs are from. But anyway, for these dark times, you know, like just remember how good that felt and imagine that we might be able to feel it again.
Yes.
Oh no, the left is using nostalgia as well.
Totally.
I just have another submission for Summer Jam. It's another one of our, like, you know, expected voices. Betty Who has never really popped through from gay world into the mainstream. She's given us so many Summer Jam worthy songs in the past. Let's listen to her offering this year.
Wish I could just take a bite. So I do, I don't think I can sink any lower. Every tomorrow I wake up and pray I won't be caught in the sugar. You're sour, you're salty, you're sweet.
Okay, everyone's in third gear this summer. I'm not thrilled with, I mean...
It, That sounds like a song that Shane would have sex to on the L Word. and didn't Betty Who like have a guest appearance? I mean, it's nice. It's kind of slinky and yes. predatory, but mm-hmm. yeah,
I liked it.
Yeah,
I liked the production a lot. There's yes. a little like snazzy, echoey kind of thing.
I love Betty Who. I just want somebody who's going to like give me everything, you know.
I don't know that we can satisfy your jam needs.
I believe in the summertime. I believe yeah. in the capacity of the summertime to meet me in ways that I may not want or expect. Like, Cake by the Ocean happened the September before, but it still took good care of me.
Well, I wanted to ask you, do you feel like there's a, I mean, can we say, is there a front runner for you?
I am going to say personally, and I don't want to influence the process, which is, of course, just me deciding. Boys from Lizzo, I was driving a car down yeah, the 101 solid yesterday, pick. And it was doing some very good work. And Bloom from Troye Sivan,
yeah.
Just because he's gay, and there is a way that I feel like it's giving you cool for the summer, but it's taking it further.
I have to say there was that one summer where we talked about Lizzo's Good as Hell, and we didn't pick it.
I know.
And I don't even remember what we did pick instead.
And it was probably a stronger summer jam than Boys.
Probably.
All right, you've been listening to Streamlined Pop Rocket, hosted by me, Guy Branum, with Margaret Wappler and Karen Tongson. Our theme music is Party Bootchap by Azimizo. Thanks to him for letting us use it. Thanks to everyone who gave us those 5-star reviews on iTunes. It keeps Margaret safe and healthy.
So good.
Ninanot said, always interesting and entertaining to listen to. Plus, they've got a great selection of music. Thanks to Karen, I now have a playlist called 80s and Faux 80s Music. Phoebe spelled in leet speak, she says, or they say, or he says, Mexican hot chocolate for the ears. Velvety, spicy, and enjoyable. This podcast consistently furnishes my pop-up playlist with its weekly parade of jams and simultaneously allows me the edifying and vaguely smug illusion that I have a window on the sparkling and smart world of West Coast pop culture heroes. Oh, that's so sweet, guys. Thanks so much.
That's really sweet. Also, that's Mexican sweet. Hot chocolate is the best hot chocolate.
It's wonderful.
That person is correct.
Get in touch with us on Twitter. We're at Pop Rocket. Join our Facebook group and get in the discussion. Or come to our Instagram account. It is called...
at Pop Rocket Podcast.
It is very good. We are a production of MaximumFun.org. Our show is edited by Julian Burrell. Again, pretty sure I've never met him. And our producer is Laura Swisher, whose hair is up tonight.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Listener supported.